Well, hi, howdy, folks. Bastion here. Sorry. I was doing an accent before I started, and I couldn't get out of it soon enough. You ask who Bastion is? Well, it's me, the co-host of Stargate Fancast. I know I've been gone a while, but I had things to do. What made me come back is I happened upon, on my travels of the world recently, the latest episode of Stargate SG-1, which was just released in the UK via Sky One. And the title is The Quest Part 2. Sadly, in America, you won't be able to see it until April because of sci-fi. Yes, we all agree they're crazy. We don't know why they're crazy. Thousands of psychologists and psychiatrists have examined the nut jobs who lead sci-fi, and have yet to come up with a logical reason to their craziness. They could know Paula Abdul, but that's besides the point. yeah. But before I get into the juiciness of Stargate SG-1 episode, Season 10, Episode 11, The Quest Part 2, I kind of want to go back over why I haven't been doing any podcasting. Well, I haven't done a show since really the end of summer, like more like the middle of August, something like that. The reason is because of college. The college that I was doing, though, didn't have me taking any classes. Instead, I was teaching classes. What I was teaching was high school math, and I was in charge of about 122 students. I don't know if you know high school students, but they really don't leave a whole lot of time for anything but teaching and planning lessons, and I didn't have time to do a podcast. That, and really, they quit showing Stargate, so there wasn't really any reason to do shows, besides theorize what was going on, and I'll get to that later. But yeah, I'm done student teaching, I'm done graduated college, and I'm now a college graduate, and I start a job this week. So, that job, you know, I'm a substitute, so I'll have more free time than as if I was a regular teacher. And, well, the reason I really couldn't do a podcast is because I was student teaching and I was working another job. Didn't really have time, free time to do this, and my free time was all shoved somewhere else. So, yeah, enough about me. I know you guys love hearing about me, but I don't love hearing about me. So let's get on with the show. I decided to, my timely return would be well placed with the newest episode of SG-1. So, let's get right to it. Now, in the Season 10, Episode 10, The Quest Part 1, the ending left SG-1 in a cave, and they were about to face a dragon that Morgan Le Fay placed to guard the Sangreal. Now, the intro to the episode, as I went through it several times, because I'm a nut job like that, they left clues. Most important was the first one, which is, speak the name of the Protector, and you will be granted the Sangreal.
The Sangreal shall instead belong to he who speaks the Guardian's name.
I picked up on this after a couple listens, and once they got to a point in the episode where they're like, Okay, the scroll said something about blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, yeah, someone's going to come up with, Daniel's going to come up with the name. And I knew the name was going to be Morgan Le Fay. Okay, no, it wasn't that simple. I agree. It wasn't Morgan Le Fay, but rather her ancient name.
Ganos Lal.
Once her ancient name was spoken, the dragon disappeared. With the dragon gone, the steam... Why can't I talk? With the dragon gone, the team is still in the clutches of Adria. Now, with the ball still tagging along, they go back to where the Sangreal... I put my little finger quotes up there. I don't know if you know if you saw that or not. Well, it's an audio podcast, so you couldn't see that. But they think that now that the dragon is gone, the Sangreal would have materialized. They go back, and it's still a hologram. And Sam utters the wonderful phrase,
"Oh, come on."
At this point, this is where they get interesting. I don't want to delve any deeper. But you know what? Okay, I didn't want to delve any deeper as I was coming up with this episode. But I realize that most people who listen to this podcast or even know anything about podcasts probably know how to get the episode I'm talking about, so I'll just go on and go into it. They were standing there in disbelief after they attempted to grab the Sangreal, and then you see them teleport it. Not all of them. Edria was left behind in the cave, and then we cut to a scene where the team is teleported to a secret room, and they begin to investigate. Now, what's in this secret room? Daniel, why don't you tell us?
Here lies Myrdan, Archmage of the Round.
This is the room that Morgan Le Fay, according to mythology, froze Merlin to stop him. Rather, though, mythology got it wrong. She froze him not to capture him, but to keep him alive. Now, as we found out in Atlantis, Morgan Le Fay was sent to destroy the Sangreal. She did destroy it, but she did keep the only person alive who could build it again.
It's amazing how similar this is to the myth. Supposedly, Morgan trapped Merlin in a cave and left him frozen there for all eternity. Only in reality, I think she was trying to protect him.
How do you mean?
Well, I'm starting to think that maybe Morgan did destroy the Sangreal after all. I mean, she probably figured she had no choice, that if she didn't do it, the other ancients would have just sent someone else.
So instead, she did the next best thing.
She preserved the one man capable of building it again.
Myrdan is unfrozen at this point in the episode, and when he comes to, he learns of the aura in the Milky Way galaxy, and realizes the severity of the issue, and asks them if they are willing to go to any lengths to achieve their goal.
Before I agree to join with you, I need to know that you are willing to do whatever must be done to see it through.
Surely you have some idea of what we've been through to get here.
What you experienced so far is as nothing compared to what is to come.
Don't worry about us. We're on board.
So they begin. Myrdan begins to assemble the Sangreal, and the team is teleported to another planet. We'll get back to what they're doing in the laboratory later on. Adria is still chasing them, though. She is angry, and she is still actually, even though she's like this 20-year-old hot-looking woman, I think she still has the mind of a child. And she is getting upset because they were in her grasp. Now, she finds out that they were teleported through the gate system. And being the super or the Orisai, she knows the gate system. She knows about the DHD, she knows about the gate. And so she begins to attempt to track them by analyzing the gate and searching for the address that they used. Luckily, though, Morgan Le Fay was smart when she created this planet, protective thing for Myrdan. The planet they're on is protected by an obelisk that teleports them from planet to planet. Carter believes that the obelisk is on some sort of timer and switches from planet to planet from time to time. However, there are clues throughout the episode. I don't know if anybody else picked on them, but I think I did. That lead me to believe that the obelisk will only work when someone is dialing into the planet. Now, I believe that Carter's right on one point. The planets are not connected to the regular gate system, but are on a closed circuit, kind of like a loop, and just loops them back and forth between the planets from time to time. Thus, when someone is dialing in, which nobody should be, because the only person Morgan Le Fay left was Myrdan, so no one would know about the system, so they would have no reason to be dialing in. So she set up a system, I believe, to where that when someone would dial in, the obelisk would detect that incoming wormhole and transfer them, because it's a super fast dialer, to a different planet. Now, if someone was chasing the contents and could find the gate address of the new planet and would dial in, each attempt would only teleport the contents ahead of the chaser. Thus, the contents would be one step ahead all the time of the chaser, leaving the chaser extremely frustrated, to say the least. I think that would be too simple, though. So, of course, SG-1 wants to get off the planet and attempt to search for the remote dialing code that sends them from planet to planet. This is a problem, because we all know that once Carter sets her brilliant mind to a task, she will accomplish it, and of course she does. Now, Ball and her both originally believe that the dialing code is actually hidden inside the obelisk, and they find the shutdown command code. Wait, I just spoiled it. What I really meant to say was, Carter and Ball originally think that the dialing code is hidden within the DHD. Although after hours of searching for it, Carter begins to change her mind and believes it's in the obelisk. And it turns out she's right. So they get to work on finding the shutdown, the override code for the obelisk. And they do so. However, Adria is still chasing them and getting faster at finding the address of the new planet they are on. Now, if my theory were correct about the one-step-ahead plan of Morgan Le Fay, each time she attempted to dial into where SG-1 was, they would be teleported ahead to another planet. But what did SG-1 just do? They disabled the obelisk, and so now they won't be teleported off the planet. Okay, while all the gate disabling is going on, Daniel now has Myrdan in his head. Wait, how did Myrdan get inside Daniel's head, you ask? And why is he in Daniel's head? Well, let me go ahead and tell you. Myrdan had been in stasis for quite some time. From an episode in, I think, the first or second season of Atlantis, we know that there are consequences for such long-term stasis. Needless to say, Myrdan was suffering from stasis deterioration. He was attempting to rebuild the Sangreal, but that exerted a great toll on his body, and he realized his body was failing him. And so, in a last-ditch effort, he transferred the necessary information into the ancient device, which looks similar to the ancient data source that nearly killed O'Neill twice. Daniel realized what Myrdan had done and stuck his head in, and thus Myrdan was inside Daniel's mind. So he left only certain information, like how to build the Sangreal. Well, that's a lot more information, but that was one of the biggies. Daniel, realizing this, he passed out for quite some time, and when he woke up, he realized what he could do, and so he began to destruct the Sangreal using the ancient computer-aided design device, or the ancient CAD device. It is during this procedure that we learn the device is made up of really three parts. Daniel completes Daniel finishes stage one, and takes a lot, but the task takes a lot out of him, because he realizes that he has to allow Myrdan to completely take over his mind, which is hard to do. I guess. I don't know. Never had anybody take over my mind before, so I couldn't really... not really an expert on that one. However, stage two, yeah, it gets done. But it's still taking a lot out of him. The last stage is the red crystal they attempted to get in the dragon's cave. He is working on the crystal stage. This is where the deactivation of the obelisk comes in planet, because it's a great plot moment. Because you're almost to that last step when the villain comes in and clutches it out of your grasps. And so that's what happens. Adria dials in and sends her troops of Ori through. Daniel can sense this, since Myrdan's in his mind, he has these super ancient powers now, like levitation and or telekinesis, whatever he called it. And so he sends Vala and Cameron to reinforce Teal'c and Carter. We don't see what happens to Daniel after Vala and Cam leave, and we assume he goes back to finishing crystal. Adria appears inside the chamber, and we see Daniel already resting. And he tells her she's already too late, and that things are different now. And with his ancient powers that he gained from Myrdan, he called down lightning to destroy the Ori soldiers. Daniel's already resting, so This is what leads me to believe that he had something up his sleeve, that he finished the crystal, but he wanted Andrea to believe that he didn't. So, she's angry, she's a child, she's pissed off, and so she tosses him out. She has her way with him, tosses him out to his friends. Not has her way with him, as in, like, has her way with him, but beats him up and, you know, threatens him and does all this stuff. Now, after Daniel's thrown out, Vala, being the mother of Adria, this, I forgot about that. Vala's the mother of Adria, attempts to put the fear of mother into Adria. But Adria refuses and starts to call on her power. Daniel steps in front of the attack, giving the team enough time to escape through the gate. However, Daniel's not able to escape, and is now in the clutches of Adria. Now, funny thing is that I thought Daniel would definitely die again in this episode, which would bring his death count to, like, 3 now. But he doesn't die. He is instead captured. I'm really glad I got to see this episode. Okay, that was a summary. Now I'm going to get into my analysis of it. I was quite glad that I got to see this episode. Many reasons. It just keeps getting better and better. It does, I tell you. It keeps getting better and better. But I want to discuss more how the Obelisk is able to send people ahead of incoming wormholes, because I think that might be a sticking point for some people. So, let's do it. Okay, let's talk about the Obelisk. I believe it works, like I said before, by sending people, by once it detects an incoming wormhole, it supersedes that. But okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. We know, the Aura Priest told us that the Obelisk is able to open a gate and teleport whatever through in just a matter of seconds. They didn't have enough time to get a gate there, just because we all know that when you dial a gate in the Milky Way galaxy, it takes a long time to dial. But somehow the Obelisk was able to do it like that. I don't know if you heard that snap or not, but let's see if you can do it again. Quiet, quiet, quiet. Ah, there we go. It did show up. Perfect. Okay. Getting back to the whole obelisk thing. So, I surmise that once a person starts to dial in to one of the gates where the obelisk is at, the obelisk detects this, supersedes the incoming signal, and dials out rather quickly because the gate address is already pre-programmed, sends through the contents and shuts down, thus enabling the incoming wormhole to come in. I told you it was simple. Okay, now that is out of the way. I want to talk about what will be going on later in the season. Namely, what's going to happen to Daniel. And I want to talk about what he did before Adria arrived on the planet that they were working on, the Sangreal at. Here's what I surmise. Daniel was able to finish the crystal. But he let Adria believe that he didn't finish the crystal. Why? Because he knew she would be angry after having chased them. And she knew that he knows she's kind of gullible. She's a child. She'll just take things as they are, thinks she's all powerful, so she thinks that nobody can fool her. So, now we get to the part where I might reveal some plot later on. When she tossed Daniel out, he still had the crystal on him. And when she threw him in front of Vala, or when he threw himself in front of Vala, we see him grab her. I think he put the crystal into one of her pockets. And with Adria believing the device not complete, she would see no reason to destroy the other two parts of it. Since no human can operate the device, no one can create the last component. Now once SU-1 discovers the crystal, and they also figure out the gate address that they were on, they can return, grab the other two components, and then find a way to get the device to the Ori Galaxy. Yeah, I know the storyline will be really more complex than that, but that's all I got for now. I hope that's how it goes, anyway. If not, you can send me an email. If you think I'm totally crazy, send me an email. Even if you agree with me, or you want to discuss this further, send me an email. It's sgfancast, that's C-A-S-T, @gmail.com. So it's sgfancast@gmail.com. My name is Bastion. I think I might end this. No, you know, I'm going to talk about some things. Talk about some news. Let me pull it up here real quick. Pulling up some news. I'm getting my news from GateWorld. I love this website. I just wish they would update news more. But, you know, Stargate doesn't really have a whole lot of news that they like to talk about. Just some things. They're on GateWorld, so you should really go check them out. It's gateworld.net, not .com. I know .com is more popular, but .net is better. So it's www.gateworld.net. Just some headlines they got going on there. They got new episode details for the back half of Season 10 of Stargate SG-1. So they have official summaries over at the UK broadcaster Sky One. But, you know, I read through these. Pretty much, we know that they get... Daniel becomes a prior. It's kind of interesting. I really want to see that episode. They only talk about four Stargate episodes, but they do talk about using Merlin's device, which is interesting. And I think that's actually going to be the cliffhanger episode. And then they'll finish that and they'll start the movie, which is another thing I want to talk about, the Stargate movies that they're going to be doing. It's ongoing. They're going to be doing ongoing Stargate movies. And the first movie, which starts filming April 15th, okay, great news, it's tax day, so they're going to start filming April 15th. On that one, that's where they're going to finish up the storyline of Stargate SG-1. And then, actually, the second movie that they're going to be doing is starting June 1st. It's pretty quick turnaround time. So, it's pretty good. I hope you guys enjoy those. I know I will. I'm actually going to buy the DVDs. Let's see, what else are we going to talk about? Season 2 covers for Atlantis. And anything, right? Ooh, here's a good one. Prices have been cut for the Women of Sci-Fi calendar. Now, they have some hot women on Sci-Fi, let me tell you. Mainly, Amanda Tapping and Rachel Luttrell, both from Stargate, might I remind you. Ooh, and they also have Tara Rothery. Hot doctor. I wish she was my doctor. Okay, that's enough. And Lexa Doig, the new doctor on Stargate SG-1. And it does retail for $12.50 now at womenofscifi.com. That's W-O-M-E-N of sci-fi.com. And actually, there's some news that Michael Shanks and Christopher Judge's company, Slack Twaddle, is going to come out with a 2008 Women of Sci-Fi calendar. And in addition to that, a 2008 Men of Sci-Fi calendar. Not too excited about that one. The other one, yes. Not the Men of Sci-Fi. But either way, good for them. They're doing other things other than just shows. Another thing, I want to talk about this. Daniel's acting, or not Daniel's acting, but Michael Shanks acting, or portrayal of Daniel is, I think, the best on the show, because you actually believe that is Daniel Jackson. That can be a character, and that man has passion, and you just see it in his eye. He throws himself into it. He is the man. Okay, that's about all I want to say. And lastly, I know Leon mentioned this already. Great news. Great, great, great news. Guess what? An exclusive third Stargate series is in development. That is awesome. So yes, we'll be losing SG-1. But hey, guess what? We're going to be getting a fourth season of Stargate Atlantis. And a new season. A new series. Based in Stargate. So, you know what? It's going to be all good. I'm happy. We're going to have movies. It's really turning into quite a fandom franchise. People love this. It's so amazing. I just wish they had, like, merchandise that, you know, merchandise. Merchandise. They need more merchandise. I don't think they have enough. I mean, like, stickers, t-shirts. Yeah, I mean, individual sites have that stuff. But, I mean, official MGM merchandise. I think they could really take over the world. I mean, they tried to do a cartoon Well, I think I'm done. I'm rambling now. It's 4:30 in the morning. I want to go to bed. So, peace all out. Or peace out, y'all. Have fun. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Just some last things in closing. I think I wanted to talk about, you know, where how you can contact us. You can, I already told you my email, but just in case you missed it, you weren't paying attention, it's sgfancast@gmail.com. I hope to get a lot of emails from you guys because I'm lonely and I need contact with the outside world. I've been locked in my basement for so long. Okay, I'm lying. I haven't been locked in my basement at all. But anyway, my other co-host can email him at zb1991@gmail.com. And I think we even have a phone number you can call us. I don't know if that's still working. But hey, you know what? It's worth a try. Blah, blah, blah. Where is that? Where is that? Where is that? Where is that? Nope. Not that one. Sorry, I'm going through my Gmail inbox right now. It's mainly full of sci-fi news. Blah, 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 blah. Where is it? Where is it? Okay, there it is. I was looking in the wrong spot. It's 206-888-4561. Go ahead and leave us a voicemail. Anything you want to talk about? Personal life, Stargate, World of Warcraft, Halo, video games, life, school, math, anything. I'm an expert on pretty much anything you want me to be an expert on. I will be an expert on it. Just let me know, and I will be an expert on it. Alright, now I am truly done. So if you have anything you want to say, I just told you how to contact me. So go ahead and do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Alrighty then. Peace out, y'all.